immigrants. Oh, there we go with the thunder. Woohoo!
Yeah.
That was cool.
It reminds me of the opening of Halo 3 ODST. The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 432, recorded on July 25th, 2016. Hello, and welcome to the 432nd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 265th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
TGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, yeah. You know, I hate to say this, but Pokemon Go really sucks. It really, really sucks. There's no two ways around it. I mean, its biggest strength is that it's a social activity. You have a bunch of friends and they're talking to each other while they're hunting. Which isn't a bad thing, really, you know. But as a game by itself, it sucks. I'd rather play actual Pokemon. What's the last one? Pokemon X and Y?
Yes.
Okay. So, speaking of Pokemans, or not playing Pokemans, what have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing Legend of Heroes still. I'm just about back at where I was before I lost my previous save, so I'm about to go into I'm in the capital now, and I have to do this fighting tournament to get to the Queen to warn her about this conspiracy that's happening. So I'll be able to complete that game and move on to the second chapter and finally play that game. And tomorrow is the next chapter of Minecraft.
Oh, I thought it was August 2nd. Oh, okay.
No, it's 26th.
I was going to ask you if you saw the trailer and what you thought of it. It was the name
I
of the
did
episode.
See that. It looks very crazy. It's very like Big Brother technology taking things over and controlling things, and it looks like it'll be fun.
Do you think it's going to get meta?
It's been meta.
Oh, okay. Because the name of the episode, by the way, is Access Denied.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you'll finally have episode 8, and then what do you think? Wait, is it 7, 8, 9? Right? They have actually a 9, or is it just 6, 7, 8?
I thought it was 6, 7, 8 because the murder mystery one was the first one,
right?
And then the 7th one is this Access Denied, and so there'll be one more left.
I wonder if this is going to be an ongoing thing. I mean, usually you have seasons with these games, but I doubt you'd be surprised if they announced 9, 11 and 9, 10, 11, like
yeah,
a couple
yeah,
of weeks from now. You know, I mean, it couldn't be that hard to make the episodes, you know, because of the assets they use.
Yeah, it does seem like they have a good engine going and reliable assets to make a quick story, and I'm sure the actors don't mind getting paid, and so, yeah.
Let me ask you a question. Have the episodes been consistently the same quality?
I think so. I think they've been better, because they've, in the past, some of the episodes, the characters would have their speech cut off. Like, I would be reading the text, and, like, they would only get, like, a couple words in, and then all of a sudden it would get chopped off for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. But it's been a lot better in the current episodes.
But, I mean, the actual storytelling.
Yeah, okay. I think so. I've enjoyed it.
Because, you know, if they maintain, you know, the storytelling, you know, episode 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, I wonder how long they'll go with it. Keep in mind, Microsoft doesn't mind.
As long as it's profitable, it'll probably keep going.
Yeah. So, let me ask you another question. Do you do any actual Minecraft playing in the game, in the adventure series?
In the adventure series, you're mostly just following a storyline. You might build a few things, but it's all you don't get to create the thing. They're creating it because it's, again, a story.
Okay.
You know, you don't get to say, oh, I want to build a house over here. And it's like, no, we got to go do this.
I wonder if you ever, what's it called? I have to wonder how many kids are actually creating their own stories now in Minecraft proper with fanfic for the Telltale series.
Yes, they've been doing it. That's what they'll Machinima is that, is of making stories. If you go on YouTube, there are quite a few people that have made, like, these long, epic stories of using Minecraft as a vehicle for telling the story. That will have, I guess, other players there, and there'll be actors, and then there'll be a narrator doing speeches, and you'll see the text on the screen, and yeah, there's been a lot of people doing stories, their own stories, Minecraft.
Yeah, what hath Rooster Teeth wrought? Because they started, they may not have been the first, but they really started the Machinima craze with Red and Blue, Red versus Blue. I mean, just made it explode, and you know, Microsoft saw what they were doing with Halo 1, so you know what? We're gonna make it easier with Halo 2.
I don't know if they were the first or not, because I've seen it in Second Life. I've seen it with the.
They're not the first, but they're the ones who made it explode. You know, they made it an actual business to do Machinima.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how about you, TJ? What have you been playing?
Finished the Warriors.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Did you go out and play?
Watch the movie after I finished the game because.
It is on Netflix.
Yeah. Well, I just looked it up for free on YouTube. Not as great a quality, but still pretty good.
Okay.
Just because, god dang, there was. I looked up some fun facts and like production.
Found out it was based on Animaxis.
Oh my god, it was psychotic to shoot that movie.
Yeah. There was a lot that there was to it. Yeah.
They used one stage set. They used one single like set that they created, and the rest was shot on location in New York.
Yeah,
and they had so many problems with like local gangs, and they had to deal with like all sorts of other crap. And it's just amazing that that movie got made. But
you know what The Warriors reminds me of in a weird way, and it's with The Wiz, because they both take place in New York, and they both take place in real life locations in a fantastical setting. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And trust me, The Warriors is a fantasy. It's based on Anabasis, the Greek play. And you know, my favorite character in the entire film is Lynn Thigpen's character, and she's the one who plays the DJ. And all you see of her are these really red lips.
Yeah.
And there's something about that image, just her talking with those red lips, you know, and her voice. Okay, warriors, it seems like then, you know, the way she taunts them through the...
That's one of the most iconic parts of the film. Like, and she didn't even know that it was just going to be her lips on those shots.
Yeah.
Like, she thought they were filming Oliver, and then, like, they decided, like, to really give it effect to just zoom in those shots right up to the mouth. And that's one of the most iconic parts of that movie. Another iconic part is that Cyrus, the guy who played Cyrus, actually was never supposed to play him. It was actually supposed to be this other guy who was an actual gang leader, but he never showed up, and to this day, nobody knows what happened to him.
Oh, I think we know what happened to him. By the way, the thing about doing the close-up on Lynn Thigpen's lips is that she's supposed to be God, you know?
Yeah.
Or Greek God, anyway, you know? But those lips are hot.
Yeah, it's fucking great. But yeah, utterly enjoyable. I really enjoyed finishing that game again. It spurred me to watch the movie again, and it's one of my favorite movies from that era.
Well, why don't you watch The Wiz? Yeah, as goofy as it is, you know.
I've seen The Wiz, but I haven't seen it in a long time.
I mean, just having Maybell as the I forgot her name, playing the Wicked Witch of the East, you know, just working in her sweatshop, what's it called? She's the entire movie to me.
That really will be worth it re-exploring again, because I haven't seen The Wiz in a long time.
Just be warned, it was written by Joel Schumacher, the adaptation. But, and Diana Ross cries a lot in that movie. All she does is cry. Anyway, so you finished The Warriors...
Uh-huh. I finished The Wiz. But I have been I've been getting way back into Rainbow Six Siege.
Oh, there's a reason for that, and we'll get into it later in the podcast.
Definitely. But I gotta say, the transition from PS4 over to PC has been extremely jarring. I'm getting the feel for the keyboard and mouse, but god, I hate it.
Oh. You know, that the thing is that we knew, us older gamers, we moved into another era when the younger gamers had no idea how to play a shooter with a keyboard and mouse.
TJ, there are controllers. The Logitech has a controller that looks like a PlayStation controller, and you can plug that in and use that if you don't want to use
it. Well, here's the thing, though. He'll be at a severe disadvantage if he tries to use a controller in a PC game.
Yeah, I have an Xbox 360 controller and a wireless adapter for it. So I started by using that, but man, the reaction time that people have when using a mouse, and even when I have when using a mouse, is just that much quicker.
It is a lot quicker. I can't stand the slow clunkiness of moving the joystick. It's just not as fine-tuned as the mouse.
See, here's the thing. There are certain things that you use a mouse and keyboard for. There are certain things you have to use a gamepad for. I will never be able to play Batman Arkham Asylum with a keyboard and mouse. And you can't play sports games with a keyboard and mouse. And you can't do driving games with a keyboard and mouse. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, you need the fine control, but there's a different kind of fine control. With the mouse, it's aiming. With an analog stick, it's moving back and forth on a lateral plane, and you can't really do that well with a mouse or a keyboard.
And so, yeah, I would much prefer to play on a joypad
or on a joypad. There are joypads. I mean, I'm not going to mind, but there are joypads.
Yeah, but if we live in a world where if I continue to play on a gamepad on PC, I'm going to get smoked every shot.
Yeah, I mean, there are games that are going to be cross-play between Xbox One and PC. It'll be interesting to see how they mitigate it. I mean, they mitigate it pretty well with the first Shadowrun game. You know, the easiest way to do it is just to make aiming, you know, snap aiming for everybody. So really, you're not getting any advantage over the aiming part.
Now, are you talking about like aim assist?
I'm talking about aim assist. Doing that will no.
Not to that
degree. No. A lot of the games that are going to be cross-platform between, and also make it a co-op game in which you're fighting against AI, so you don't have that advantage. No one has an advantage. You just have someone using a keyboard and mouse, and they're doing different things than you while using a keyboard and mouse. You know?
Well, you hear about that even now, because, like, Overwatch is available on every major console and PC, and the metas between PC and a console are completely different because different things work when you're playing with a gamepad rather than when you're playing with a keyboard and mouse.
I just realized Gears 4 is going to have crossplay.
I am playing Legend of Heroes with a controller. It is a lot more comfortable to play like these old school RPGs with the controller. Anything that's side scrolling or you know, third person is easier with the controller.
But you know what I've never done on Gears? And that is Horde mode.
and they're the ones who
really started it, really. I've never played Horde mode.
That happened back in Gears 2. You never touched it?
No, I never. I was never an online player for Gears, really. I just played for the single-player campaign, for the most part. But, you know, when Gears 4 comes out, you know, I'm going to get it, and I'm going to try out the Horde mode, because everybody talks. I mean, I love Firefight in Halo, so. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they're just too bulky. But Gears 4 is looking promising. But so is I finished Batman Arkham Asylum on PC just to play through it again, and I played it on easy because I was just doing it for the story. You know.
Okay.
I already got the achievements for doing it on hard mode. But that reminds me, I want to do Mass Effect 1 on Insanity so I can get my final two achievements. And then I will have on Mass Effect 1 62 of 62 achievements. Which is a lot.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And that's a slog. I mean, I know a lot of people prefer Mass Effect 1 because it's closer to, like, the RPG aspect. It wasn't my jam.
No, it wasn't. It was never really like an RPG either. You know, I like what they did with Mass Effect 2. I mean, they streamlined it and realized, you know, the RPG aspect comes from the dialogue choices, not from the RPG.
Yeah. And then there's the driving segments in Mass Effect 1.
Oh, I didn't mind that. I mean, that...
Really?
Yeah, I didn't mind that at all. I liked the Mako. And, of course, Mass Effect the Drama is going to have the Super Mako.
Man, Driving in Mass Effect 1 made the entire game feel like a chore.
Well, you know, here's the thing, though. I developed a pattern when playing Mass Effect, and it is also good for getting all of the, what's it called, the stuff, the collectible stuff, like the gases and the light metals and the heavy metals and all that stuff. When you go to a system, do all the planets in that system, then go to the next system, do all the planets there, do the next system, do all the planets there, do the next system, all the planets. Not only that, but you also get into missions that... See, the missions are going to be there, whether you get assigned them or not. Like, say, Nasani Adontius, you know, the Asaria ambassador who sends you off to kill her sister.
Uh-huh.
If you just go to the system where her sister is and you kill her, when you go to her, it says, oh, and I was going to try and, trick you into killing her, you know. So those most of the missions are there anyway, you know. So that's just a good way to just scan all the planets and go on. There's one drivable planet in each system. One. The rest are just planets you scan.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some cool planets. The thing that bothers me, though, is that I read the planet descriptions. They're all so cool, and, you know, there's so much backstory to each planet. And when you go down, it's the same friggin' planet, just with a different filter on it. You know, that's the disappointing part. I mean, it's cool when you're on the moon and you see the Earth above you. There's another planet that's all red, that has a red sheen on it, and there's another one that's getting close to crashing onto its planet. You see, you also get to see where the Leviathan of Dis was in one of the planets, you know. So that's all fun, but you never got to visit any of the planets. And that's what I'm hoping for Mass Effect Andromeda, is that a lot of Mass Effect Andromeda is you looking for planets for people to settle on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping they make it so that it's sort of like Mass Effect 1, in which you drive down on these planets, but you're actually exploring these planets, and they're planets, you know? Not open plains. And, oh, look, there's a wide-open desert area. I know what's going to happen. Thresher Maw is going to attack. Because Thresher Maws are only on those places, those wide plains, if you remember.
Yeah.
One of these days I'm going to try and kill it on foot. In Mass Effect 1. See if I can do that. I really want Mass Effect 2 and 3 to be on backwards compatibility, because they keep on releasing backwards compatible games every week or so. Oh, and some great news that was just an hour ago. Beyond Good and Evil HD is going to be free for people with gold, and it's backwards compatible. So
that's fantastic.
That's a brain dead one. You just pick it up because it's there. You don't even have to download it. Just make sure it's in your library and then play it. So yeah, actually, was Beyond Good and Evil, that was an Xbox 360 game, right? HD.
Beyond Good and Evil was an Xbox regular.
No, I mean HD.
Oh, the HD.
Yeah, Beyond Good and Evil HD. I think that was an Xbox 360 game. It should be great, because now I can earn achievements for doing Beyond Good and Evil. So, I mean, I have it on Steam, but I seldom ever play it on Steam. Anyways, so another one of the games that's backwards compatible is Pac-Man Museum, but it's $20. But on the other hand, I love those Pac-Man games. They have Pac-Land, they have Pac-and-Pal, they have Super Pac-Man, all these strange Pac-Men that I used to play that no one ever played because they weren't Pac-Man. Anyways, so we're going to go on to the first news item, and this is why I cut off TJ. Rainbow Six Season 3 content arrives on August 2nd, and this comes to us from PlayStation Lifestyle. Ubisoft announced today that Rainbow Six Siege Season 3 will begin on August 2nd with the release of Operation Skull Rain expansion for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. That sounds like an Image comic, doesn't it, from the 90s? Skull Rain. Or maybe one of their characters.
Maybe.
Anyways. Along with a free map, Operation Skull Rain also includes two new operators, Caviera and Capitão. Both of them were from Brazil's Batalhão de Operas. Oh, God. I speak Spanish, and even I'm having trouble with this, because it's not Spanish per se. It's Portuguese. Batalhão de Operas e Policias Especias. Yeah, that's Portuguese, not Spanish. which is the BOPE. Rainbow Six Season Rainbow Six Siege Season Pass. See, that's a tongue twister. Rainbow Six Siege Season Pass. Owners will receive their instant access to both operators on August 2nd and will have exclusive access to them for the first 7 days. Caviera is the defensive operator of the two. As such, she possesses the Silent Step skill that allows her to sneak up on enemies to immobilize and interrogate them to reveal their teammates' location. As the attacker, Capitayo carries a tactical crossbow that can fire asphyxiating bolts that burn oxygen within a certain radius, as well as micro-smoke grenades and that can mask positions and learn movements and team movements. As for the new map, which is set in the Brazilian favela, it'll be free to all players and supports exterior shell destruction, making it Siege's most destructible map yet. Elsewhere with Season 3, a Tactical Realism custom game mode will be introduced, preventing players from marking enemies, allowing only the timer, compass, gadget, and weapon panels to be visible in the HUD. Tactical Realism also removes kill confirmations and uses more realistic magazine management. In terms of improving the game's health, Ubisoft is integrating an additional anti-cheat system with Season 3, titled BattleEye. It's described as a, quote, client-side anti-cheating system that prevents players from loading the game when detecting cheats, unquote. Provided nothing's changed, the fourth season of Rainbow Six Siege should begin in October 2016. Okay, TJ, why don't you give us your critique?
These two new operatives are going to be extremely okay, so the biggest part of Rainbow Six Siege is knowledge and communication about where the enemy is. It's all about watching the cameras, using drones, finding out where people are, and planning around them, getting, like, being able to attack around a corner before you even know that you're going to do it. These two operatives are all about knowledge of where the enemy is or hiding knowledge of where their allies are, and I think that's going to add an entirely new meta to the game.
Let me ask you a question. Are you limited to just one character per team? You can't have duplicates?
That's right. You can't pick two of the same operatives.
Okay.
And that's in casual and ranked. You're not allowed to double up anywhere. And that in of itself is like, there's already operatives before that were like imperative to figuring out enemy positions immediately. Valkyrie was introduced in the last patch, and she can place cameras basically wherever she feels like, adding a new level of surveillance to the defense side. But other than that, there's mostly just been like Buck, Frost, and Blackjack were the other three operatives, and they're mostly attack based. They've all added their own, but nothing quite like this. This is sort of a game changer. And that's kind of what Rainbow Six needs to stay prevalent, just to sort of change it up without, like, ruining things. Because I can see where people could also take advantage of these two operatives and sort of overplay them and maybe even make it a little less fun. But as long as they don't make them too ridiculously over the top with, like, you see the, like that, what was it? The defensive player, Silent Step, Caviera. As long as you don't make it so you can like see where the enemy is at all times.
I think here's the thing: is that one thing I notice is that they're very keen on interactions with players and doing tweaking and all that stuff. So I'm pretty sure if there's any imbalance, they'll probably deal with it post-haste.
Yeah, we talked about it last week, didn't we? Ubisoft has one of the most they're one of the most active on their forums of any company out there.
So now I know that I really enjoy swap mode in Halo. So you have sort of a swap mode going on with Tactical Realism.
Yeah, I'm interested in seeing what they do with bumping up the difficulties, they didn't really have a hardcore mode like most other games have. Like, I was used to that in Call of Duty Black Ops, where it gets rid of a lot of the stuff, makes it one bullet kills for the most part.
And, you know, maybe I'm cynical, but I think maybe they held that mode back until for like a year or two, because they wanted to wait until they really wanted to, you know, wait until people start getting a little bored, and then say, okay, well, here's this new hardcore mode, and we take away most of your HUD, and now It's more like you have to be more slow and more deliberate, you know, even than before.
Were you ever one of those people that, like, put a piece of tape on your screen with a little dot?
No. Here's the thing. I only like the tactical mode from Halo because it reminded me so much of InstaJib in Unreal Tournament, the original. I loved InstaJib. You know, you just aim, and if you hit someone, they blow up. That was my favorite mode. And the thing is also so cool because you'd see these lines of light coming at you. It's like, oh shoot. Stay away because I'm going to get jibbed. You know? It was a lot more visual when you had everybody with the same deadly shock rifle. And so the thing about Halo is that I felt like everybody was brought down to my level, you know? So that I was slower and what's it called, more deliberate. So swap mode made everybody slower and more deliberate. Mm-hmm. That's why I play. It's not called swap mode in Halo 5. I forgot the name of it, but it's basically mag. You know, like you just have a Magnum or you just have a DMR or something like that, and everything is more like a swap mode. Anyways, so yeah. So this is actually, now, if I remember correctly, you said you were coming back to Siege after a hiatus. So this is actually good timing for you.
I stopped playing a little after the first expansion came out, which introduced the Canadian operatives and the ice boat map. And then I came back. This is well into after the Desert Storm operatives have been introduced.
Okay.
So. Like, I was gone for probably about 8 months or so from this.
But you were playing since the start, right? So this is your third year, I would imagine.
Yeah, I was in there at the very beginning. I had pre-ordered this. And I'm happy to see that it's continued to move. Ubisoft came out with a really good shooter.
It's, you know, here's the thing. It's a lot less surprising for the PC side. It's a lot more surprising for the console side because you know how it is with the consoles. They'll get something new, they'll play it for 8 months, and they'll drop it completely. You know?
Yeah.
PC gamers tend to be loyal to the games a lot longer. Like, look at Left 4 Dead 2. People are still playing that thing.
But it also comes from the fact that Ubisoft stayed, like, they stayed on top of it, getting ready for tournaments, getting people excited for pretty much just all sorts of ranked stuff, and it's... They keep an ear to the ground on what people want, and they deliver for the most part.
Well, companies are finding out that ranked tournaments and esports make a game's lifetime a lot longer.
Yeah, and this new map, this is going to be interesting because before this, most of the maps, outside of a few breakable walls and like some very specifically obviously breakable walls. That was pretty much all the destructibility that came with the maps. So to say that there's going to be more of a exterior shell destruction, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Oh, so much for your cover. Bye-bye. So, I know that you don't have much to say about this, Scott. Actually, neither did I, so we're going to move on. So TJ's excited about the new expansion before Season 4 starts. Yeah. Anyway,
it'll be fun.
So Scott, you can take the next item.
All right. Excuse me. Sega announces two new Sonic games. This is from PC Gamer.
Time out. Sega helps. There seems to be wind on your mic there, Alf. Scott.
Is there wind?
Yeah, something's blowing.
Is it me? No, it's not me. It's you.
I don't know.
I think there's an air current near you, and when you start talking, I can hear it. Maybe you're close to your speakers or something. I think it has something to do with your mic.
Hold on. Is it better now?
No, but we're just going to deal with it. Go ahead.
Okay. Sega announces two new Sonic games. Sega held a shindig last night at the San Diego Comic-Con in honor of Sonic's 25th anniversary. Between chili dogs, it found time to announce two new games. The most exciting of these is Sonic Mania, a mashup remix reimagining of the first three games, with new moves and additional zones. Sonic fan game developer Christian Whitehead and retro specialist Headcanon Games and
Pagoda West
Games are teaming up for the joint venture. Sonic Mania will be out for PC and current-gen consoles sometime in spring 2017. See, and since I can use a controller, what's the point of me buying it on the console if I can play it on the PC? But moving on. As if to balance out the cosmos, to contemplate light and with darkness, Sega announced another Sonic game at the event, a new 3D title that looks a whole lot like Sonic Generations. It's called Project Sonic, at least for now, and it's by original Sonic development team, Sonic Team. Project Sonic will be unleashed holiday 2017.
So here's the thing. I watched the video for Sonic Mania, and it seems very indie-ish. And by that, I mean it does seem like a fan game. Now, obviously, it's not going to have the same shoddy, you know, quality of a fan game, but it's going to be very, very, very Sega Genesis. It's very retro. It's extremely retro, and as a matter of fact, I think they're using 16-bit graphic style for it. So it's going to be a complete and utter throwback. Meanwhile,
that's fine.
I know. I'm just saying. Now, Project Sonic is really going for the dark and edgy. And the reason why I say it follows Sonic Generations is because, like Sonic Generations, it has old and new Sonic in it. You know, both playing with each other. You know, if you've ever played, for those of you who haven't played Sonic Generations, you have new 21st Century Sonic, and you have the Sonic Adventures 3D Sonic. You know, from different time eras, and they're together. So that's what this one is. But, I mean, Yahtzee said it a lot. It's like, Sonic fans are always, oh, look, a new Sonic game is out, and it doesn't suck, you know? And then a couple of months later, oh, it wasn't that good, you know? But, the Sonic games that people really, really liked that were relatively new was Sonic the Hedgehog 4. If you remember those, Sonic the Hedgehog 4, Part 1 and Part 2, which are basically Sonic games, you know, 2D Sonic games. And I think that's what people want. They don't really care about the 3D adventure Sonic games.
I mean, okay, so it should be noted that the Sonic team, the guys that are making the 3D one, they did do Sonic Generations.
And
they
Colors.
Also did they also did Sonic Colors. Yeah. And those are like the two most positively received Sonic 3D.
But they
games.
Did all the other craptastic Sonic games as well. It's sort of like they hit it lucky on those two games. And the only reason why they hit it lucky is because they included elements of the 2D Sonic. If you remember, it's like, oh, so people like the 2D Sonic. They really don't care about the 3D free roaming Sonic games, you know? And it took them a while for them to figure that out.
Yeah.
So, Scott, are you a Sonic fan, 2D Sonic fan?
I've never really been a fan, but, I mean, it might be fun to play a little bit.
Like I said, if you watch the video for the 2D Sonic game, Sonic Mania, it is really, 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 really Sonic. It's 1990s Sonic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and like I said, it's being done by fan developers, not by Sonic Team. So that should be interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, the fan community has produced good quality stuff, you know. So it's doable. So yeah, I mean, if it's 16-bit, so they don't have to have a high budget to make 16-bit graphics.
Here's the thing. I think that they're going to make a better Sonic game because they're fans, you know, and they know what they want. I mean, that's not always true. I mean, you know. But I'm saying, like, these are developers who also are longtime fans of the Sonic thing. So they may come out with something that they feel that they'd want to play, and by extension, other longtime Sonic fans would too. You know? DJ?
I love Sonic. I was huge into the games. I had a Sega. I didn't actually have a Super Nintendo until I didn't play any Super Nintendo games until I was like probably like 20 years old. But
what year was it?
That would be, let's see, that'd be 7 years ago. So 2009.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Because The only time I ever played with an SNES was in the early 90s, and that belonged to my roommate.
I fiddled with it, like, earlier, when it was newer, but I never had one of my own, or okay. I never played any of the games, or had full access to them. I was huge into Sega, and I played most of the Sonic games, and I loved them. It's interesting when people say the Sonic games should be all about speed, because when you look at a lot of the Sonic games, they are, to a certain extent, but there's also a lot of platforming elements where you have to slow down and move carefully.
Well, remember, Sega had to promote that bullshit blast processing, which meant, of course, nothing. Here's a hint, kids, there was no such thing as blast processing.
Well, the most important thing about Sonic was that it was one of the first games like in that particular like level of graphics that could move at a constant 60 frames per second.
Well, that blast processing was the biggest marketing bullshit I had ever heard.
Yeah, but remember, this was also at a time when it was a big deal, where people were listening, 16-bit, 32-bit, 64-bit, you know, and all that stuff. The thing about Sonic is that now, we would know it. See, if Sonic came out now, there's a term for that kind of, it's not exactly a platformer, it's more like a rail platformer. And yes, you have freedom of where you want to go, but the entire point of the game is to find a path and stick with that path for as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's somewhere between Mario and Bit Trip Runner. You know?
Yeah.
It's in that kind of path. See how fast you can move in this path without screwing up. Sort of thing. I would say sort of like Explosion Man, really.
Hmm. That makes sense. Yes, I can see that.
So, neither of you have seen the videos, I think.
For Sonic Mania, I've seen it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think I saw it too.
So, yeah, I mean, if you notice, it really is going for that 16-bit look. And it even has the 16-bit blur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the other Sonic game is trying to be dark and edgy, and I don't know. I'm
tired of dark and edgy.
Other Sonic game looks like... Did you ever see Shadow the Hedgehog when he got his own game?
Yeah.
It's kind of like... That. It's a lot like that.
Yeah. Although there is a bit of light, because then all of a sudden, old Sonic pops up and gives him a thumbs up and a wink, you know?
When everybody is doing dark and edgy, it's no longer becomes interesting and special. It's just meh.
Well, here's the thing. The real problem is that they're going into the Sonic universe where all the characters are in that universe, and sometimes I think that just muddies the waters with Sonic, you know? I mean, yeah, it's nice he has his friends, yeah, Tails and Knuckles and all the others, you know, and the girl, Son, I keep forgetting her name, but I think it muddies the waters a bit, you know? So it'll be interesting to see how much of it is in... Because here's the thing, even Generations and Colors dipped into RPG elements, maybe not with, you know, with RPG tactics, but just different characters and all that stuff, you know, and you feel like you're doing a story. And I don't know how much of an overt story people want. Although I will say this, you know, it'd be nice if they do have Sonic and they have him voiced by Jaleel White. Urkel. Who, by the way, for those who don't know, did the voice for Sonic in the cartoons, both the good one and the bad one.
Too fast, bro. Gotta go.
But yeah, speaking of dark and edgy, the ending of the first of the good series was about as edgy and dark as you can get with anything Sonic, even more than the video games.
I've read the comics, and yeah, they. I mean, at the end of the day, it is kind of an entirely muddy universe because you have bright and colorful animals fighting a mad scientist who shoves them into machines and makes them slaves.
But here's the thing. The thing is, you don't kill anybody in the game either. Because when you destroy the robots, you're actually freeing them.
Yeah.
You know? So at least you're not killing, you're freeing. So there's that at least.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's one of the rare games in which you don't kill anybody. You just liberate them from their shackles. And the bunnies pop out. And the little Pidgeys pop out. So, anyways. Oh, by the way, did you see where someone claimed they got all 145 Pokemon from Pokemon Go?
I did. Was that true?
I don't know. I couldn't say not unless Nintendo says BS. Well, it's not Nintendo, but unless the Pokemon team says or Niantic actually is the one who developed it, said bullshit. We haven't released all of them yet, but they can't say that because then they'd be spoiling the surprise. Speaking of Nintendo, go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty. Nintendo loses billions in value after Pokemon Go truth bomb from Eurogamer.
I will say, though, it's only a truth bomb for people who are stupid. This isn't... I don't know why people didn't know this before. So, moving on.
Pokemon Go is an unprecedented success, but Nintendo recently admitted it won't directly profit from the augmented reality game, leading to a loss of $6.7 billion in Nintendo's market value on Monday. Nintendo's market value rose by $7.5 billion on July 11th, just after Pokemon Go went public and became an instant massive hit across the globe. Since its launch, Pokemon Go has added nearly $12 billion to Nintendo's market value, meaning today's dip, while sizable, isn't a total disaster for the company. Nintendo published a letter to investors on July 22nd offering a reality check on the company's involvement in Pokemon Go. Namely, it didn't develop or publish the game. Instead, Nintendo has a 32% stake in the Pokemon Company, the business that markets and licenses the Pokemon franchise to outside developers. The Pokemon Company will receive licensing fees and compensation for collaborating with developer Niantic on Pokemon Go, and Nintendo will just see a sliver of that revenue. Quote, because of this accounting scheme, the income reflected on Nintendo's consolidated business results is limited, the company wrote. Nintendo said it would not modify its financial forecast. On Monday, the first trading day after its letter went public, Nintendo's stock fell as much as 18%. It's the steepest hit to the company shares since 1990, Bloomberg reports. Many people associate Pokemon with Nintendo, and for good reason. The company has published the game since their inception in the 1990s, and it owns a third of the Pokemon Company itself. However, Nintendo didn't have a hand in developing or publishing Pokemon Go, as we noted in our previous reports on the company's stock boosts. Nintendo and Google did invest roughly $30 million in Niantic as it worked on Pokemon Go. Nintendo will produce and distribute the Pokemon Go Plus accessory, a plastic wearable that connects to a smartphone via Bluetooth and then lights up and vibrates when players encounter Pokestops or Pokemon in the wild. Pokemon Go Plus will cost $35, and Nintendo has already rolled any potential revenue from the peripheral into its financial forecast ending March 31st, 2017.
Now, by the way, when I said stupid, I meant investors who are supposed to know this stuff. The average consumer associates Pokemon with Nintendo. You know, they're inseparable.
Yeah.
But investors are supposed to know that Nintendo does not own Pokemon. So
it's always been... Game Freaks? No.
Game Freaks, I think it's Game Freaks, I believe. Yeah. So, here's the thing is that while they lost a lot of money, they still gained a lot more. So, it's sort of like getting to the top of Mount Everest, then tumbling a couple thousand feet to the first plateau. You're still up high up on the mountain. You just weren't as high as you thought you were. I mean, this is not an Enron situation in which, all of it was a lie. No, I mean, Nintendo still has 30%, a third interest, and also they're going to be releasing this peripheral, which I know Scott is having flashbacks to the Fallout 4 Pip-Boy thing that you wrapped your cell phone around.
Yeah, the little Pip-Boy thing was probably a lot more bulkier and bigger than whatever this little wristband thing will probably be, and $35 just feels like too much.
I've seen it. It's like a crappy plastic watch that you would get in a cereal box if you sent it enough CPCs.
Wow. Let's spend $35 on it. Woo! it's a cheap piece of crap that you could build with your 3D printer with 10 cents worth of production materials. I'm not lying. It's 10 cents to a quarter of production material to build these things. And if you have a 3D, you know, you might as well build it. Well, okay, so that's kind of an exaggeration because it does light up whenever you're near a Pokemon and stuff like that. But still, it is way overpriced for what they're offering.
Yeah.
And like I said before, Pokemon Go sucks. It's not that good. I just, you know, it's a communal thing.
As a pure game, yeah, it's garbage. As a social thing, it has much more meaning. Like, it's much more of like a community thing than it is a game in and of itself. The game, if it was just a game by itself, it would be absolutely garbage and no one would ever.
Because it's a quote-unquote augmented reality game, but it's not. It doesn't interact with the environment. It doesn't do anything with the environment. You'll find a Pidgey underneath your desk, or a goldfish in the middle of the road. It's not an AR game. All it's doing is taking your camera and just superimposing something up on it, you know. And, you know, I heard stories about groups of kids walking, doing their Pokemon Go, and their parents behind them also with Pokemon Go talking. Little duck trains.
Yeah, I guess I just don't like the whole rivalry thing that I see with Team Valor and Mystic and Harmony and the other one, and it's just like they're all at each other's throats. And it's just
I think it's pretty hilarious, just because...
Yeah.
Like, I was talking to someone about this. Why would they do a team thing like that? Because excluding other people from your group is fun!
You know, have you guys heard what the American wizarding houses are for the Harry Potter world?
What is that?
Oh, basically, you know, the Hogwarts one.
Oh, God, don't tell me you're going to split them up into team... Oh, I forgot. Voldemort and team... No, not Voldemort. What the name of his... Well, they do in the first movie. They all split them up into different classes.
Yeah, there's Slytherin,
yeah.
Ravenclaw, Hufflepuff, and Gryffindor. And you know those are the ones for Hogwarts. And Slytherin is this, like, evil house. But in the American wizarding house, they have these four other different creatures, and none of them are this like evil house. You know, they're
everyone in Slytherin is evil.
Yeah, no, they're just more focused. I don't know, just they seem better balanced, and it just seems less contentious than this other stuff that just keeps seeming to be recycled over and over again. But, I don't know.
Every time I think I know who everyone hates in Pokemon Go, somebody changes it up.
Yeah, like right now everybody hates the Spark team. I don't know what that little yellow team is. People are like calling it fat and lazy.
When it started, it was like everybody hated Team Instinct.
Yeah, Instinct, and, that's what it is. That's who they hate.
And, no, Instinct is the red one.
No, Valor is the red one.
Oh, is it?
Yep.
Okay. So it really hasn't changed that much, then.
No.
You know, I'm just... It just makes me think, you know, there has to be other people who can do this better. You know, yeah, maybe not have the Pokemon name, but actual augmented reality stuff.
I guess,
you know?
I just thought Nintendo would have a bigger pie of this, or bigger slice of the pie with this, and kind of surprised me that they really kind of didn't. But, they are having two games come out as well for mobile, but it's Fire Emblem and... I can't remember. There's Animal Crossing that they're going to release for mobile. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that.
I think... I don't know. I was about to say I think more people would be excited over Fire Emblem, but then again, a lot of people love their Animal Crossing. I mean, personally, which one would you prefer, Fire Emblem or Animal Crossing?
I want to see Fire Emblem.
Here's a question. Is it a new Fire Emblem, or is it a remake?
I have no idea.
Actually, not that I think anybody would care, really.
If y'all thought that Fire Emblem or Animal Crossing were going to be bigger than Pokemon Go...
No, I didn't think that. I'm thinking about between the two, though.
y'all underestimate just how much people love to enslave monsters and have them, like, fight against each other like pit dogs.
Or, you know, actually, don't underestimate people being abusive to town people. Which you can do in Animal Crossing. I mean,
no, you can't abuse them. Not really. Not the way I wanted to abuse them. I was never.
Well, let me put it this way. Actually, it's the opposite. How many people want to be abused by the townspeople?
Oh, well, that's a whole different story.
I'm gonna say this, Scott. That's why they made Stardew Valley for people like you.
You know what?
That's true. You can kind of torment them there, because I remember. The guy wanted a soda from the mart, and I didn't do it on the day he wanted it. I did it on the next day, so he was angry. He was like, "Ah, disgusting."
You know, I'm pretty sure that they won't include retro games in Animal Crossing. It's just sad.
I was gonna say we have Final Fantasy, but I know Nintendo doesn't have it anymore. That's another drop ball right there.
Well, and of course they won't include the retro games in Animal Crossing, is because they're
gotta sell them separately. Yeah,
they're selling the Nintendo Mini.
Well, on the other hand, it's going to be iOS Android. It has nothing to do. You know, these people are not going to be buying the Nintendo Mini for the games, and I think that's maybe they'll get separate. Oh well, no DLC. They'll have DLC for Animal Crossing. Oh, you want Galaga in your Animal Crossing? Well, pay 99 cents for it.
You know, that is something that I thought would be on the 3DS Animal Crossing, because it just sort of, you get everything and then you're like, now what? I'm bored. I can't add anything to this game, so it kind of does need some DLC or player custom content or something that you can share with other people. And that's another thing. You can't even do that in the 3DS. You can't share your stuff.
Because now you can buy those on the Nintendo Store. You know, before in other Animal Crossings, it was impossible to get those games. That was a selling point for getting Animal Crossing. Oh, you know what? We have Pac-Man in here. So if you know, we have Pac-Man, we have other games here if you unlock them.
Is that New Leaf that did that, or was that all of them?
I think it was the first two or three of them that did that.
Okay.
Maybe the first two. I mean, when the Pokemon Store opened, I mean, not the Pokemon Store, the Nintendo Store opened, then the odds of you getting a retro game in Animal Crossing went to zero.
Because they can sell them elsewhere.
Yeah, anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. PlayStation Neo said to be coming in either September or October. This comes to us from PC Advisor. Microsoft announced that the PC One Slim would launch on August 2nd, just a few weeks from now. Oh, actually 2 weeks from now. No, actually next week. And, you know, here's the thing about that. I went into GameStop, and I was asking around, well, what kind of trade value would I get for my Xbox One? Because if it's like $100, then hell yeah, I'll do it. I mean, you know, I'd be paying for a 1 terabyte Xbox $200. You know? But if it's not as good, then I'm not going to do it. Anyways, the Slim isn't anything revolutionary, of course. It'll be attractive to those who've been on the fence about an Xbox, and perhaps it'll show a new standard model going forward for at least a little while. But what isn't a standard is anything Sony has done with the PlayStation Neo. Are we sure that's what they're calling it, by the way? The PlayStation Neo? Is that what they announced it as the name as? Or did they just call it the next PlayStation? Anyway, they did nothing to announce the system. At best, they merely confirmed its existence in a muted state ahead of E3, which was supposed to explain why it wasn't going to be at the show. With Microsoft announcing the Xbox Scorpio, their own upgraded console, was not going to be out until fall 2017, many are assuming that the Neo is waiting until that window, and yet none of the evidence has actually suggested that. According to those who have been snooping around Sony's plans, the idea has always been for this fall, and might actually remain this fall, despite zero announcements or reveals to date. And yet, here we are, almost in August, and if the Neo is coming in, say, November, that's just over 3 months away. It could be coming, but if that did happen, Sony would have to eat some crow. The lack of a Neo at E3 indicated that it was, quote-unquote, wasn't ready for prime time, and it seems more likely that when Sony discovered the power levels that Microsoft was achieving with the Scorpio, they did not want to debut their own console, quote-unquote, upgrade and have it fall short, far short, of a rival they've been besting for 3 years now. But it could be a plan in which they're not doing that, that the Neo launches with the specs we've already seen leaked. It's more powerful than the current PS4, but under the Scorpio, with a focus on 4K visuals and better VR support. And it launches soon. Now, here's the thing that is interesting. they are also launching their bigger product, which is PlayStation VR, this fall. If the speculation is accurate and the Neo offers the sort of capability to make the VR run better or more smoothly or improve its visuals somehow, then rather than splitting the pairing up would be a problem. Sony would launch the PSVR this fall, but then delay the Neo until, what, spring, summer, or fall? Or maybe they'll just release it without any fanfare, without making a big deal about it, undersell it so they know it's not a fully new-gen console, just to make something your 4K TVs more useful and help out with the PSVR. It would be a year ahead of Scorpio and even ahead of the NX. So they're figuring maybe if people buy this console, the PlayStation Neo, they won't have the money to buy the other consoles when they come out a year later. Hmm. So the specs for the PlayStation 4.5, they are just a little bit faster, just a little bit, but it's enough to have an appreciable difference. So the thing is that I knew that Microsoft was going to do something with Crackdown 3 during the Microsoft conference, but they dropped it because they had the it was included with the rest of the logos of the games that they showed during the show. And we've seen that these shows, you know, they react almost instantly what the other person is doing. For instance, remember back when Microsoft announced the Xbox One at the price, you know, Sony had a field day the day later and made fun of it, you know, and, oh, you want to see how you can trade? They did the disc thing, you know, and all that stuff. So they really change fast. And it's not, it's pretty easy to see where Sony said, oh, shit, 8 teraflops or whatever it is, you know, and all this. Yeah, we're not going to show it at the show. We're just going to cut it out of the show. And we're just going to do it at a different date, you know. TJ?
I don't know. I've said it before and I'll say it again. It takes a lot for me to buy any console that isn't like a clear and dramatic.
Well, you're a PC
difference.
Gaming master race, so who cares?
Yeah, I'm
kind well,
of
so am I, but you know.
As well, TJ, I don't like this idea of constantly upgrading, and the advantage of the console is supposed to be that you don't need to worry about that. And now they're kind of again leaning towards that with these little, you know, halfway marks between this one and the next one, and it just makes me really hesitant to buy a console. And I haven't bought this next gen whatsoever.
But you know what? We're now conditioned for that with much more expensive devices. I mean, cell phones are $800-900.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, $600-900.
I have paid nowhere near that.
Yes,
wow.
You have. But here's the thing: what they do with cell phones is that they what's it called? They give you this monthly extra pay, so you don't pay anything for it. You just pay per month, you know. So you have a layaway plan with cell phones. But if you try to buy a cell phone right off the bat, you'll look at the price point: $680, $780, $900 for these cell phones. You know.
Wow, that's way too much.
Well, that's why you have layaway payments for the cell phone.
I did the cheapest phone for my plan, which was free. So
yeah, but you still had to pay extra each month, didn't you?
No, I don't pay for each month.
Oh, so you bought one of the... Was it a smartphone?
Yeah, it's a Android Max.
Oh, okay. We're talking about stuff like the Galaxy S things and the iPhones.
Mm-hmm.
See, but even for me, I have an iPhone 6 Plus. I never pay out. Like, I guess I do the lease thing.
Yes, you did the lease thing. You actually ended up paying more for the phone than you would have if you'd just done one lump sum. But
yeah.
But here's the thing. When are they going to do the layaway plan for consoles?
That's a good question.
I mean, can you imagine? You get your Xbox One free, and you pay $30 for the next 2 years per month. Oh, actually, you could actually would do it in 1 year, actually, with $30. Or $15 for 2 years, you know? And you're already doing that with... You're doing it with Live, too, so... Or $30 a month, and it includes Live. Oh, no, that's still too much. But I'm just saying, you know, they have to have layaway plans for some of these things. I mean, the Scorpio, if it's $500, I would love a layaway plan for that.
When are they going to open up Xbox and Sony physical stores that treat you like crap when you go on to negotiate your plan?
Oh, well, they already have Microsoft stores open. But they don't treat me like crap, so they're falling way behind Apple. See, Microsoft, you have to catch up with Apple. hire some really rude people.
Some rude people that think way too highly of themselves.
I just moved between Sprint and AT&T, so I've been...
Okay.
This is not the cast for that, but I have some words about those people.
I have T-Mobile. They've been very friendly. So, at least there's that. At some point, I'm going to get Verizon when I have a good paying job again, because T-Mobile, while they do have USA coverage, it's still there's way too many dead spots. I've been
Verizon
finding them.
Has been really good with that. Yeah. That's what I have.
But right now it's just T-Mobile because I'm paying less for it, and at some point I'm hoping what happened to long distance calls happens to data. In which they now, it used to be when you called people long distance, it was cost per minute, right? Now it's just you talk all you want. I'm hoping it eventually happens that, there's no longer data plans. It's just one data plan. Everybody gets the fastest thing possible, which hopefully will happen because Google has been putting up all these Link kiosks in New York. And soon there's going to be Wi-Fi everywhere, free Wi-Fi everywhere. So people will say, why am I bothering with a data plan when I can just get Wi-Fi just from New York?
Yeah.
So getting back to Sony, how big do you think PlayStation VR really is going to be?
If they deliver on most of the stuff they were talking about at E3 and then they continue to build upon what they had there, I feel like it'll have a. I feel like they'll
what
do
if,
well.
What if they insist you must use the Move controllers with it?
well, that was never. The only requirement that I'm aware of right now is that you got to have the PS camera.
I think that too. I mean, that goes hand in hand with Move controls. But they were heavily hyping those Move controls. They got to get those things out of the warehouse.
If I have to buy another piece of hardware just to get it to work, then that's going to officially put it up above what it would cost to get a even like a God, I've just
another
drawn
computer?
A blank. No, the VR that everybody hates right now because the guy is an idiot.
Oh, you mean okay, Oculus. Got it.
Oculus Rift. If I have to buy one more piece of peripheral to make the PSVR work, then yes, it'll be just about as expensive as the Oculus Rift, and then really will it really be worth it? I'm not sure.
The HTC Vive, it's even more expensive. I think it's like $800, but it's so good. Unfortunately, you need a top of the line PC for that as well.
Yeah.
But the HTC Vive is what VR really should be. But it just tells me we're 10 years away from having affordable VR. And I don't know, the PlayStation VR, people who have actually used it say it's crap. It's like my first VR. And the Oculus Rift VR isn't that good either. At least when I used it. At least not for gaming, but they did it for video. And it was like all the seams showed up when you do video on VR.
Yeah. But the Oculus VR is out now, right? It's commercially available.
Yeah, sort of, kind of.
What's the status on the HTC Vive?
I mean, people are getting people who pre-order their Oculuses are getting it, right? But as for being on store shelves, no.
What about the HTC Vive?
Not that either. Like I said, nothing on store shelves yet, but there will be
there
at some point later. I think in September or October. Remember, these guys delayed the release of their headsets, right? And all the pre-orders got pushed back, and even they were going by first pre-order, first serve, and they're still sending those things out one by one by one by one. So,
that was the Oculus.
Yeah, I'm talking about the Oculus. So the store Oculus isn't going to be available for until September, October, I would imagine. Any listeners who know better, just write in the comments and correct us. Because I'm not 100% sure.
Well, I was going to say, because what it comes down to is, as far as, the interface goes, it's still a brand new frontier for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, is that in order to use VR, I don't think the PlayStation 4 is capable of it. That's why they were doing this entire thing about the Neo. I don't think it's capable of doing it well enough to say, oh, yeah, this is something I want. But on the other hand, you know, we've seen people enjoy cheaper stuff before, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't know how much people love the 3D and the 3DS. It was cheap, but enough people enjoyed it. And then they got their eyes dropped out of their heads, but, you know.
It was amusing for the first few games, but I gotta say, I turned that slider all the way down for every game to play on there. It's just like, it is a strain after a bit. And it drains the battery, like, twice as fast.
Yeah. Which is something you want for your portable console. How about you, Scott?
Yeah, I don't really use the 3D slider either. I turned that thing all the way down. And, I mean, I didn't really need it for any of the games I played. I played Professor Layton's series, and that didn't need 3D, and it was just fine, you know, and it did run a lot better without that all the way up, and also if you lower the volume, too, that'll save even more battery power.
It's funny because, you know, Nintendo gave up the Ghost and 3D game, the 3D and the 3DS games now, and, you know, it used to be a lot of these games would have perspective puzzles in which you had to have the 3D on or else you couldn't solve it. And now it's like, oh, whatever.
You know, you know what's telling is that there are games like there are games that are being released very recently. Like Spike Chunsoft just released their latest Zero Time Dilemma on the 3DS, and there is no 3D capability on that, and it just tells you nobody really cares about that feature.
Yeah. Well, for one thing, I'm pretty sure it adds development time to start off with.
Yeah.
So. And, like I said, if people aren't using that feature, then no one's going to do it. That's why the Wiimote, you know, for the Wiimote, people did it a lot, and then people realized that the Wiimote games that didn't come with a Wii U sucked, you know. I mean, how many carnival games can you possibly play on the Wii U? Or actually, not the Wii U, but the Wii.
Yeah.
I mean, the tablet's better because as Paul's fond of saying, is that it allows him to play on his Wii U and watch TV at the same time. So,
yeah.
Scott, before we move on to the ending.
Yeah, just, I don't know if I'm going to buy another next-gen console. I got games I want to be... I'm saving to get the next Civilization VI that's coming out. And
well, you see, the PC doesn't have any next-gen consoles. You have to upgrade your PC. That's it.
Well, my PC seems to be pretty good for now, so I don't even have to upgrade that. So, again, that's what I'm getting at. It's like, consoles seem to be more demanding on upgrading right now than my own PC is. So I just... really hesitant in plugging down so much money for just more hardware.
Oh yeah, the fan on my PC is broke, so now has an open side with an actual fan blowing into it, and I have to have the choice: either pay for the repair, you know, which is going to be $100 to $200 because it was a liquid cooled fan, or just get an entirely new PC. But if I want to get a really nice gaming PC, it's going to cost me $1,500.
Yeah, so the fan will be cheaper.
Yeah, but you see, my PC is aging, so it's like, I'll end up spending $200 extra dollar for something I might not use a year from now. See, it's a couple of years old, but when I got it, it was state of the art, right? And it still can handle almost every game, you know. And I did upgrade the graphic card. Oh, wait.
Well, I guess it depends on what you want to play.
Here's the thing. This is not in the news items, but I think it's very interesting. Have you seen NVIDIA's top-of-the-line graphic card?
Yeah, I've heard that they've been coming out with higher-end graphic cards.
It's
the
1040, and it costs, I think, $1,000.
I was able to play Fallout 4 on a game computer that really wasn't supposed to be able to play it, and I played it just fine. So I don't think Civ 6 is going to break my specs. It may be Elder Scrolls 6 that will require me to buy a new computer, maybe. But for now, I'm pretty good to go, and it's a 2-year-old computer.
TJ,
it's definitely not state of the art.
If I need a,
it's called the Titan X, just so you know.
If I need PS Neo to run PSVR, then maybe. Otherwise, call me when PS5 comes out.
Okay.
Yeah, and I guess I don't really care about VR either. So.
So here's the specs for the Titan X. It's the GTX 1080, and it comes with 11 teraflops. It has 12 billion transistors and 3,500 CUDA cores running at 1.53 gigahertz. There's 12 gigabytes of GDDR5X memory on board. Here's the thing. You know how big this thing is? It's 10.5 inches long by 4.5 inches.
Jeez, you're going to have to get like a special computer just to house that thing.
Well, the thing is that it has its own vapor chamber to cool down the heat, because I'm pretty sure this thing heats up like nothing else. Jesus, it supports... Here's the kicker. You ready for this? It supports 8K.
Wow.
Huh.
It supports 8K. So it's $1,200 in the U.S. So that is actually the cost of a new computer for me. Almost the cost of a new computer. And the cost of three Xbox 360s.
Yeah, I mean, I think with that kind of hardware, it better last a decade.
But
I'm
going
to say, if it's the kind of graphics processor that can run for the next three computers that you get...
I guess it's worth it, sure. Yeah. But you got to protect that thing. I mean...
Yeah, definitely.
I would get whatever the best warranty is for a card.
I'd get a UPS power supply. I would get... what else would it be good? Oh, and get like a really cold-ass room, too. Not just... you know, the fan internally, but make sure the room itself is cold. Like,
but here's the thing. Yeah, here's the thing. The Titan X, if you've seen the picture of it, it looks like a computer itself. It looks like its own. It looks like a tower itself. You know.
I got a look at it a while ago, and it kind of looks like the old. It kind of looked like the old school. What I saw, I don't know if it's the same one, but it looked like the old school Xbox hard drives. Like that big brick that you would...
No, it doesn't. Yeah, I know what you're thinking of. It has the same general shape, because it has a turbine. The fan looks like a turbine on the side of it. But it looks like a console unto itself, you know. But imagine having a graphic card that's more expensive than the rest of all your components in your PC combined.
If it can last up until 8K games are commonplace, then maybe?
But you need an 8K monitor. See, that's the problem there.
Yeah, nobody has that.
But, it's future-proofed, we'll say that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if I had... I mean, hey, you know what? That would be quite the bragging piece, you know? It's check out my graphics card. It's the Titan X, man. So you ever go to you ever see those $1,000 earbuds?
$1,000 earbuds?
Yeah,
no, that better be made out of titanium or something.
Well, I'm trying to remember the name of it. But it's the Shure's. The Shure is $1,000 earphones. But if you're gonna pay that much for Shure earphones, they look hot. They look really nice. They're silver. They're indestructible.
They better be indestructible.
Even if they're indestructible, I'm still getting a friggin' warranty for those too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my Bose earbuds still work pretty well. You know, and I spent $100 for those.
Wow.
It has a true subwoofer experience. Yeah. Talk about doing all these.
That's
it. I want to win the lottery just to send my friends. Oh, here's your 1080. Here's the Titan X for you. Oh. And here's some Shure $1,000 earbuds.
I'll go through the money quick.
Yeah. I really want to try one of these days. But I already spent $800 for Psychonauts 2, so I think my spending spree is over.
I'll tell you this. For $1,000, sound is very important in Rainbow Six Siege. I better be able to hear people from buildings away. And also be able to hear my wife when she walks into the room to talk to me.
Let's see. The Shure features quad high-definition balanced microdrivers for high-end crystal sound. So, yeah, I think you'll have that.
That's amazing.
And then people will think you're a cheater because you're able to react to noises that you shouldn't be. How'd you do that?
Hacks.
I mean, you know, there are speakers, the dual speakers, which actually accurately do surround sound. So, you know, they actually trick your ears into thinking it's surround sound when it isn't.
I'll tell you this. The best headset that I've had for a while is actually my PS Gold headset.
Okay.
Those are like a dynamite set of cups. Mm. And I use them they work on PC as well, and I've never had a problem with any other. Actually, I don't know if you would be able to tell the difference too much, but I used the Gold headset last week when I had a lot of interference going on.
I want to do a contest in which we give away a Titan X. And the winner is some fake person who's me. I don't care if I defraud everybody. I want it for myself. I'm not giving it away. I could promise two Titan X's, and I don't think we'd get more subscribers, unfortunately. The five or six people who are listening, sorry, I'm not going to give away a Titan X. I'm sorry.
Speaking of contests, though, is anybody... One. Oh yeah, they did.
Yeah, last week. Jerry did one. I had to flip a coin.
Was it the Kobe Bryant coin?
Sorry, Dominic. What? That was all the E3 swag.
No, I mean, did you flip the Kobe Bryant coin?
Oh no, because it's in a clamshell. No. Aww. No, I just flipped a regular coin. But yeah, I mean, you know, it had what's it called? I know that. Scott knows a lot of some of the content because I sent him the same Civ pen and journal that he got that I sent him, but only Scott got the Tyranny lapel pin. I wish I'd gotten more of those.
Yeah.
So do you wear that pin?
No, I have it with my Loot Crate pins.
Okay. So, the Loot Crate came with pins.
Yeah, Loot Crate has been doing pins now. They did a D&D one where they have a little dice, and a Fallout one. They have a little nuclear bomb. And,
I guess just like the that little that bed that the Tyranny pin comes in. It looks much better just that sleeping in its bed.
It does.
So, anyways. Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast or the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to fans at GamingPodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. So, yeah. I'm going to have to check the iTunes, see if there's any new comments. It'll be interesting to see if some people posted new comments.
Yeah, we need more comments.
And gave us 1-star reviews. Hey, wait. Actually, you know, you have friends, don't you? Have them comment on the podcast, damn it. Give 5 stars and have them rave about our podcast, how awesome it is. I don't care if Gamergate calls us out on journalistic integrity here. We're not dealing with journalistic integrity. We're talking about iTunes comments. We're allowed to fake them. Or have our friends post it. So, anyway. What? Go ahead.
Yeah, I've tried to, you know, get them to listen, but I guess they're just too busy.
Well, they're too busy listening to the podcast. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care.